All right. Good morning, everybody. It is Tuesday, March 8th, 11:10 a.m. And we're doing Chem 12A. And I was just going over all my notes, going over the textbook, making sure that things are aligned. I have notes that I've used forever. And as the textbook has changed, what I've done is I've reorganized my notes to align better with the textbook rather than sitting down and rewriting all my notes. I really should just sit down and rewrite them because now my notes seem like they're all out of order, even though they're going in order of the textbook. And sometimes it throws me off a little bit. So what we did last, today is now Tuesday. So what we did last week on Thursday was we were looking at conformations of alkanes. And we were looking at anti-conformations, gauche conformations, staggered versus eclipsed, all of these different types of conformations and relating them to relative energy, that the conformations as a molecule rotates, vibrates, does all of those things that they do with energy at room temperature and above, they change their potential energy and kinetic energy within the molecule. And so it's a constant trade-off between the potential energy and kinetic energy within the molecule. And as I had alluded to, many of the things that we're going to study, many of the chemical reactions are going to require certain conformations in order to be able to go through a chemical reaction. And if the molecule cannot reach a particular conformation because of sterics or restricted rotation, because of other elements within the molecule, then that molecule simply cannot undergo certain chemical reactions. So understanding these conformations is important. As we're going to look at today, we're going to move from conformations of linear molecules to conformations of cyclic molecules. And we'll look at conformations primarily of six-membered ring systems. So let me go ahead and jump into it and let's start some new notes. And oh, I should also mention that yesterday was the deadline for turning in the exam one. I noticed that almost everybody has it in. If you haven't turned it in yet, please go ahead and do so. And I'm going to look at those this afternoon. I don't know how far I'll get in grading them. It usually takes me a little while to grade them. They're much more extensive than a quiz. And I can go through and do it, but usually it takes me about 12 to 14 man hours to actually go through and grade them, depending upon how many students I have. So it's not a short process. And as I grade them, what I tend to do is I grade them page by page. Once I get past the first page, I no longer know whose exam it is that I'm looking at. And so oftentimes when I'm commenting on them, I'm commenting a little differently than I do on the quizzes. On the quiz that are one page, I know exactly whose quiz everybody's that I'm grading. And sometimes I make personalized comments to people, but as I'm doing the exams, I try not to do that as much. And I try to make comments that are just very straightforward. And then at the end of it, once I'm done grading and putting a score on it, then I look and see whose exam I've got and look over the exam a little bit more and make some more personalized comments towards it. But, to try to be as consistent as possible, I grade them one page at a time and one problem at a time so that everybody's is graded fairly and graded the same way. And I will grade the exams in the same way that I grade the quizzes. And that is with a lot of partial credit, looking for you to show me what you know, as opposed to trying to catch you on things that you got wrong. So trust me, give me a little bit of time to get that graded and I'll try to get it back to you as quickly as I can. Maybe I can get it back by Thursday, hopefully by the latest at Friday. And if you have any questions along the way, just let me know. All right. Co-ops are still coming in. I didn't check to see how many people had turned those in, but the co-ops were also due. And if you haven't completed that or turned it in, please do that as well. And I'll get that graded. I put lower priority on grading the co-ops, higher priority on grading the exam and quizzes and getting those back to you. Okay. All right. Let me know if you have questions. Let's go ahead and get started. I'm going to get us into a screen share. My iPad up. Well, it's time to work. My cable's in the right place. There we go. Okay, that's where we left off. We were looking at conformations of molecules And I think that one thing that I didn't say here, I'm going to go ahead and start a new page for this. One thing that I didn't say here on confirmations is that we looked at confirmations of fairly small molecules. I mean, so far what we've done is we've done ethane. So we've done CH3 and looking at that molecule, and naturally we would draw the carbons of the things that we're looking at. And we've shown how we can do a staggered conformation. And we use the wedge bonds and the hash bonds as three-dimensional indicators and looking at down that bond, right? Such that we could draw that Newman projection. And I'm just rehashing here for a minute because I'm going to launch into things that are very similar. The front carbon, if this is carbon number one and this is carbon number two, number one is in front, number two is in back. And the hydrogens at the top are right and left at the bottom. And then on the back carbon, the hydrogens are staggered in that way. And I can draw that conformation as given to me. We then stepped it up and we went to butane. And when I looked at butane, I did the same sort of thing. I took and drew it this way, such that I could draw its conformation, or I could draw any conformation. I'm just drawing it in a staggered conformation. And I choose a bond to look down. And that bond that I'm looking down, I'm sighting down that bond there. And as I sight down that bond, I do a very similar process in terms of being able to draw that. Now, I could take any molecule and I can do this for any particular bond that I want. So I could choose a molecule that maybe has an isopropyl group on it. And maybe in the back, I have a methyl and in the front, I have a hydrogen. And on this side, maybe I've got a methyl group and then two hydrogens. And I can seek to then draw a particular conformation of that molecule. And I can look down any bond I want. I don't have to look down just this bond. Actually, I was going to draw this in a slightly different way. But I wanted to show you that we can do this sighting down the bond here. And what I want to change is this guy. I'm going to change this to be just the stick molecule. And I'm looking at a particular conformation of that molecule. And as I look at that conformation and draw it out, I do the same thing. I've got hydrogens. I've got the CH3 group going up and back. I've got the isopropyl group going left. I've got the methyl, and going right, I've got the hydrogen. And it allows me to very quickly construct the Newman projection. But if I wanted to, I could sight down a different bond. And I could take and I could look at it. If I draw it this way, I have to be worried about what's going on this back carbon. So I'm going to be a little bit more careful about how I draw this back carbon. I'm going to draw this as the stereocenter, or not stereocenter, but I'm going to give this the three-dimensional direction this way. I'll put the hydrogen here and the methyl back. And then this group, I'm not going to worry about so much. And I'm going to sight down this bond. And so if I were to number these bonds, if I were to go through and I were to say that this is carbon number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and I'm numbering it now for nomenclature. So that would be the backbone of the molecule for nomenclature. What I'm doing is I'm citing down the 4-3 bond with 4 in front. So I'm looking down the 4-3 bond. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to look at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I'm going to look down the 3-2 bond. And I can cite down that bond just as easily. And so it may not be in an ideal orientation, but I can still cite down it and get what I need. There's the ethyl group, the hydrogen, and the methyl. And then on the backside, what I've got is in the current orientation, the way that it's drawn, I have a Gauss, an eclipsed conformation where I've got the methyl group. I'll be a little bit clearer about these guys. And on this side, I've got the hydrogen. And this is an eclipse conformation. So this one was staggered. And this one is eclipsed. So however it's drawn, however it's presented to me, and as long as I have a clear numbering system, I can be asked to cite down any particular bond, and I can draw that Newman projection citing down that bond from the direction that I'm being asked. And then I can be asked about energy, about the relative energy of these conformations. For instance, a problem may look like this. I'm spending more time on this than I wanted to, but this is probably a good idea. Let's name this molecule really quick. This will do a bunch of things for us. So this molecule looks like it is a 2, 3 dimethyl pentane. And I want to cite down the 4-3 bond. So here's the question. Looking down the 4-3 bond on 2-3 dimethyl pentane, draw the lowest energy conformation. Okay, so we're going to go back to that molecule and we're going to look at it, and we're going to use this image here to start with. So we'll take, actually we can take and we can draw this molecule first. Let's take it and say this is 2, 3, 4, 5. There is the 2, there is the 3 methyl. I'll go through and I'll number them because I started counting this way. The bond that they're asking me to look down is the 4-3 bond. So they want me to cite down that bond there. In citing down that bond, I'm going to then re-envision this in sort of a three-dimensional aspect that I have hydrogens top and bottom and the CH3 group. And then on the back, now this actually happens to be a stereocenter. We haven't talked about stereocenters yet. I would have to give this to you specifically which stereocenter I want. So I'm just going to draw any particular one. I'm going to draw the isopropyl group going up. And then I'm going to draw arbitrarily putting the methyl group forward and the hydrogen back. And once again, we're citing down the bond that is here, and I'm going to draw that as a Newman projection. So I take and I draw my first Newman projection taking and putting the methyl group down that's on carbon number 4. So this again is 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. So the methyl goes down, that's carbon number 5. The two hydrogens, left and right, nothing fancy there. Then in the back, going up, is the isopropyl group. And on the, let's see what I've drawn, on the left-hand side is the methyl, and on the right-hand side is the hydrogen. This is one conformation. But it's not necessarily the lowest energy conformation, and I need to then check to see which of these conformations is the lowest energy conformation. So we remember that there is free rotation about this sigma bond, and that this sigma bond can rotate. And so what I need to do is either choose the back or the front carbon to rotate through. Sometimes I prefer to rotate the front carbon. I just find it a little bit easier. And so I leave everything in back alone. Leave that back set configured as is, and then rotate the front into the three different possible conformations. So what I've done is I've taken the methyl and I've rotated it clockwise. I'm going to take the methyl and I'm going to rotate it clockwise. And then I'll compare these three conformations and figure out which of these conformations is the lowest energy. This is generally what we're being asked to do. So now that I have all three conformations, let's say this is A, B, and C. Now I compare these to see which of these conformations is the lowest energy conformation. One way to do this is to take and highlight those groups that are the large groups. So this group here, the isopropyl group, is the largest group that is on the back carbon. And the CH3 is the largest on the front carbon. So once you ascertain that those two groups are the largest groups, go ahead and highlight those two groups in all three structures. And then also pick up the medium size group on the both front and back. So this group here, red is large. Blue is medium. And the hydrogens are small. The hydrogens are the smallest thing. And so now what I can do is I can go through and I can analyze each one of these structures. And what I see is that here between the two methyls, I have sterics between the two methyls. Here, I have sterics between the two methyls. And I have sterics between the large isopropyl and methyl. And here I have sterics between the large isopropyl and methyl. So when I look at it, I've got isopropyl and methyl anti. The two methyls are gauche. On B, I have all three gauche. On C, I've got isopropyl and methyl gauche. And methyl anti. So what I'm seeing is I'm seeing here that the smaller groups are anti and the two large groups are gauche. Here, all three are gauche. And here I've got the two smaller groups gauche, but the larger groups are anti. Minimizing the sterics means getting the two largest groups anti. And that's what's going on in this structure. This structure has the two largest groups anti. And that means that this is lowest energy. It minimizes the steric repulsions. And so that would be my lowest energy conformation. Would be A. And that's how I would attack it and go through and analyze it. So now we've done an example that has three different substituents on it. And all that it requires is for me to know the difference of the sizes of those substituents and to rank them on both the front carbon, the back carbon, to draw all three configurations, and then to look through and analyze those sterics associated with it. Okay. So what that tells me then is that tells me that most of the time, this molecule is going to be in this configuration at room temperature, and that these other configurations are not going to happen as often because they're going to be much higher energy. And that's going to relate into reactivity later on. It's going to relate into the rate of chemical reactivity for certain chemical reactions based on how much of a particular conformation is present at any given time. All right, you guys are awfully quiet. Any questions coming up, Sophia, Jonathan?
I guess I'm just having kind of a hard time understanding the concept.
Yeah, it's a concept just like any of the others that is going to have to be practiced. And and going through a number of different problems and examples and practicing it. But the concept is one of these molecules are not flat. They're three-dimensional. Mm-hmm. And their three dimensions have consequences in terms of relative energy associated with each conformation. And that certain conformations are more favorable than others. And we're learning how to represent them. And we're learning how to use Newman projections to analyze them, to figure out what the lowest energy conformation is. So that's
all good on my end. I'm just I'm quiet because I'm taking down notes.
Yeah, no worries. And usually when there's a larger class, a lot of people have questions, and those questions come in as we're going through and doing it. When it's only a couple of people, it's hard. So you guys who are watching these all remotely, you may feel like you're getting everything you need, but that ability to ask questions is so critical. And I'm going to keep encouraging you guys to try to attend live if you can.
Quick question. So the main conformation types are eclipse, staggered, and gauche. Are there any that I'm missing?
The hard part is, how do I say what is eclipsed, what is staggered, and what is gauche as soon as I get into three things? So when I look at two, yes, you're right. When I look at two substituents, those two substituents, if I choose to say this is the substituent that I'm interested in, then this is anti. If I choose a position that looks like this and I have the large group over there, oops, that goes go into the middle. That one needs to go into the middle. That's better. This is this is gauche. And then any of the conformations can be eclipsed. So it doesn't matter what orientation I put the group in here that this is eclipsed. And so those are the main names. But as was shown over here, which one of these three would I say is anti? And the answer is you can't, because there's no single position that is anti, because there's multiple substituents. And so what I can say is I can say that relative the isopropyl and the methyl are anti, but the methyl and the methyl are gauche. So gauche and anti don't describe a conformation per se. They describe the relative positions of two groups. And if you have more than two groups, then a conformation has multiple things going on. It has anti for these two, but gauche for these two. These guys are all three gauche. And then in the last one, the two methyls are anti, but the methyl and the isopropyl are gauche. So we don't generally ask or try to assign anti to a specific overall conformation. Anti is used to describe the relationship between just two substituents on the ring system. And so this is a little bit limited. And so what I would say is that when we get to multiple substituents, that I can do that guy, I can do a different sort of group here.
So I think now that I'm looking at it and not just like jotting down notes, I'm kind of starting to understand like the concept and the way it looks. Because at first I was like, I'm not understanding what's going on, but it's starting to make some sense. But my question is what makes the first one the lowest in energy, because the two largest are anti? Why does that mean that it's lowest in energy?
Because when you have these two groups anti, notice how I'm using red for like really high energy strain and blue for lower energy strain. Mm-hmm. Then when the two small groups are next to each other, they're at a lower energy because they simply don't repel each other as much. But when I put them next to a really big group, that really big group takes up more space and bumps this methyl group even more, pushes it away even more, creates high strain. That high strain is high energy. And so, and so as I'm looking at high energy here, and I'm looking at high energy here, what I've got is between this large group and this group being anti, that minimizes my steric repulsions and makes this lower energy overall.
Mm-hmm. I see. That makes sense.
Okay. Cool. All right. And this idea is also a critical one, because a lot of times students will ask me which of these conformations is anti, or they want to refer to one as anti, one as gauche. And the answer is you can't. You can refer to orientations of two groups, but you can't refer to a overall conformation as being anti or gauche. And so here, as I'm illustrating, we could say that these two groups are anti to one another, these two groups are gauche to one another, but the conformation doesn't have a name per se. So yeah, Jonathan, you weren't missing anything. You're doing great.
All right, cool.
Okay, let's set this aside for a little bit and let's launch into some cycloalkanes, because we've got some cool stuff to talk about today with cycloalkanes. Okay, so as we go to talk about cycloalkanes, the first thing is to just do an overview of those different systems. We start off with the smallest being the cyclopropane, and we launch into successively bigger systems. And how we draw those systems in a standard sort of way. So we've got three-membered rings, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 is generally the largest that we're drawing that has sort of a standard geometrical shape to it. Beyond 8, we start doing some funky things. But and these, as we would expect, are named appropriately, cyclopropane, cyclobutane, cyclopentane, So the nomenclature of these is fairly easy. Cyclohexane, heptane, and octane. Okay, so when we look at those, some things definitely come up. For instance, when I look at a three-membered ring system, and let's take this ring system, and I'm going to try to draw this ring system a little bit flatter. So let's look at cyclopropane for a minute. And if I want to envision this being fairly flat, one way to do it is to draw it this way and to give the hydrogens a three-dimensional sort of nature to them so that I could see this thing sort of in three dimensions. The bond angle that is here is 118 degrees. The bond angle that is here is 116 degrees. And the bond angle that is inside that angle is at 60 degrees. I mean, if we think about that, a triangle, if it's a perfect triangle, should be 60 degrees. So the question is, what is that? What is that hybridization? What does that bonding look like? What would I say the hybridization of this carbon is when I look at that carbon? How would you describe that hybridization? Right? Because isn't something that has this geometry supposed to be sp3? And isn't this bond angle supposed to be 109.5? So is this carbon, as I'm looking at it here, what is its hybridization? Is it sp3 or is it something different? I mean, just by counting the bonds, I would say S, P1, P2, P3. Yeah, it's sp3. But sp3 is supposed to be 109.5. So what's going on with this ring system? The ring system is tweaked in a way. And if we think about how a carbon makes its bonds, carbon being sp3 hybridized, if we take this cyclopropane and draw this out again. Let's draw it out like this. What I find is that carbon tends to try to make its hybridizations. Why does my thing do that? Let's see, this isn't going to do it justice. I know what I need to do. Let's do it as just a regular triangle. Normally, the bond angles are trying to make 109.5. And so what happens is the sp3 hybrid extends out this way. And the sp3 hybrid from this one extends out that direction. And this becomes the overlap. And this becomes the sigma bond. But that sigma bond is outside of the nuclei. That if I look at the direct line of the nuclei, the direct line of the nuclei is along this line here. And normally what I see for a sigma bond is that a normal sigma bond looks like this. The bonds extend directly towards each other and overlap this way. where the bond density goes between them. And what I normally see is that when I look at those two carbons, that I get a bond that has electron density between it and a little electron density on the outside. And this is a normal sigma bond. And what I'm seeing in this cyclopropane ring is that in the cyclopropane ring, I'm getting something that looks like this. I'm getting electron density. I don't know why I'm having trouble drawing this. I apologize. My drawing is not quite the way that I want it to be. I'm getting something that looks like this. And this is the cyclopropane. And what that's reminiscent of is not so much a sigma bond, but a pi bond, and that it's pi-like, not identical, but pi-like. Just remembering sort of what a pi bond looks like, that when I look at a pi bond has electron density above and below. This is a true pi bond. But sigma places the electron density squarely between the nuclei. This is clearly outside of the nuclei, more pi-like than sigma-like in that regard. And that has some implications in the way that the molecule reacts. So that one of the things that I see is that if I take a molecule that is a double bond, that I can do a reaction called hydrogenation, where I can add hydrogen and a catalyst. And that catalyst will cause that double bond to break and add those two hydrogens across the double bond. And it's called a hydrogenation, and it makes an alkane. So there are other hydrogens that are existing here. We're just looking at chemical reactions for the first time. So it's nice to be able to think about what's actually happening there. And the way that we would normally draw this is that if we weren't concerned about trying to track where everything is going, the reaction would look this way. And we would just call it done. Cyclopropane, when reacted with hydrogen and palladium on carbon, does this same reaction. And if I'm tracking where these hydrogens went, these two hydrogens landed here and here, and they broke the ring system in order to do it. So if I think about this as having two hydrogens there and two hydrogens on this side, we'll look at those two, then those two hydrogens are still here and here. And I can think about this as number one, number two, number three, number one, number two, number three. And what happened is I broke the bond between two and three, just in the same way that I broke that pi bond. And the reason that that can happen is because the bond is pi-like, and because the palladium can access the electron density in the sigma bond. This stops functioning or no longer works when I move to other cyclic systems. So what winds up happening is, I've got a little thing here. I can do this reaction. I'll put a temperature here. This reaction works at about 20 degrees C. This reaction works at about 120 degrees C. So I do have to heat it up a little bit in order to be able to make it go. If I take a cyclobutane and I run this reaction, hydrogen, palladium on carbon, this takes about 200 degrees C. So the energy requirements are going up each time, but this will make a butane. And then when I go to a five-membered ring system, and a six-membered ring system, this reaction no longer works. So H2, palladium on carbon, no reaction. Even at elevated temperatures, I can even heat this thing up quite a bit and it doesn't go. So the question is, well, why doesn't it go? Well, look at what's happening with the bond angles, right? So the bond angle, when I look at here, this was 60 degrees. When I look at the bond angle here, this is 90 degrees. When I look at the bond angle here, this is 109.5. When I look at the bond angle here, this is 109.5. So that what's happening here is a transformation that as I go from cyclopropane to cyclobutane, to cyclopentane and hexane, I'm progressing more and more sigma-like, less pi-like. And that's what's going on in terms of that chemical reaction. So what do we call this? How do we refer to this when we look at something like this and we're looking at why this bond is the way it is and the strain that is created in trying to make that bonding system? We refer to that as ring strain. Ring strain is the steric strain created by having very small bond angles. In small rings. And so that's what's being evidenced there. So that gives us a little bit of insight into that ring. And I don't know if I have it here. Oh, cyclobutane. We can look at the cyclobutane real quick. The cyclobutane is not quite 90 degrees. It's close.
Is there a difference in bond strain between like carbon-carbon or like, for example, carbon-oxygen bonds, like an epoxide versus cyclopropane?
Definitely. Definitely. And that plays into the reactivity of them with the lone pairs. Those lone pairs usually constrain ring. The lone pairs usually push down on the other substituents more so than another group. And so in a ring system with an oxygen in it, as opposed to a carbon, the bond angle is naturally tighter anyway and has a little less ring strain, I think, than the carbon-carbon. But that's a great question, Jonathan. That's one that we could do computationally and would also make a great co-op.
I don't think computations will be necessary.
No. I have a co-op where you guys are actually going to be doing some of these computations. And that just brings to mind some great questions that I could ask about oxygens and nitrogens and the nature of those elements and the fact that they do have lone pairs and how easy it is for them to change hybridizations as opposed to a carbon where the carbon has to maintain four groups on it. So it's an exciting topic. It's an interesting thing to think about. So anyway, here with the cyclobutane, the cyclobutane tweaks a little bit, and this guy comes down purposefully a little bit, and the bond angle here is closer to 88 degrees within the inside there. So it's close to 90, but it's not quite 90. Lots of ring strain in here. The hydrogens, when we look at them, the bond angles on these hydrogens are 114. And we say that this thing is puckered slightly. So it's three atoms. We think about three atoms in the plane, and then the fourth atom is either above or below the plane a little bit in the way that that group bends. By the way, these groups, as we start looking at cyclobutanes, cyclopropanes, cyclopentanes, they can be the main chain, but they can also be a substituent. So for instance, we can have a molecule that would be methyl cyclobutane as the name of the molecule. We could also have 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 This would be 2-cyclopropyl, 6-hexane. And so where the main chain is the longer chain, the ring can take a substituent seat. And notice that as a substituent, what we do is we always use the YL for substituent. And so we're identifying the main chain this way, and the substituent located here. And on the other one, we're taking the ring system to be the main chain, and the shorter group here, the substituent. So that's the way that we would handle nomenclature with those a little bit. Now, when we start getting to 5-membered ring systems and 6-membered ring systems, things get a little bit more exciting. A little more going on. So let's do cyclopentane. In a cyclopentane group, the conformations that we see in the cyclopentane groups is that we get 4 components in a plane. I made a mistake here in the way that I want to do this. I'm going to cut this one back a little bit. And then the last one puckers up or down. And so we can look at, let me get that back group longer than the front group. And then that group goes down. So this is all in a plane that's here, and that's above the plane. This would all be in a plane. And that group below the plane is the way that I sort of draw them. And as I said, the bond angles here are close to 109.5. And this puckering allows those bond angles to reach that 109.5 degree sort of bond angle. And I can look at each of these groups on here. How I draw this back hydrogen is a little hard, and how I draw this guy, he's gonna have to come down. I didn't really leave myself room to draw him well. I'm gonna leave the back one off. Let's imagine that it's underneath the ring. But this rotation, if I go through and number them, number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, then I'm numbering also 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. This is called pseudo-rotation. And these are different conformations. We can use five-membered ring systems, and we can look at conformations of five-membered ring systems. This requires a little bit more imagination, but I can take and I can draw a five-membered ring system. And on that five-membered ring system, I can put some substituents. Let's make this one a methyl that's back here. And let's do the same thing on this carbon, except on this carbon, let's go ahead and put, let's put a methyl group on this side, a hydrogen on that one, and then let's draw the conformation as we come from that direction. And so I wanna look down this bond here. I wanna sight down that bond between the two groups. I can draw that in a Newman projection, but I have to get a little bit creative on how I draw it. So if I'm looking at the front carbon has three substituents that way. Can you tell me what substituent is on this right-hand side? Is it the hydrogen or is it the methyl? So imagine taking this and turning it. I'm going to turn it towards me. I'm going to think like I'm holding onto this handle. And then I'm going to look down this bond and I'm going to look at the orientation of these three pieces as they turn and rotate towards me. Do you know what's going to be in this position here?
The CH3.
It is the CH3. And this one is the hydrogen. And this one is the ring. And then on the back has an eclipsed conformation. And on the back, this is the CH3. That's the hydrogen. And this is the ring. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually just connect that ring together. And that's the conformation that I see. And that conformation can rotate slightly. This is eclipsed. But what I can do is I can rotate it slightly. I'm going to turn this guy down a little bit. And as I rotate it, I'm going to come into a conformation that's going to look like this. The CH3. The CH3. That's a hydrogen. This guy is a hydrogen. And then this is the ring that comes around that way. And this would be the gauche. That would be that orientation on the five-membered ring system. If I wanted to, I could be a little bit more careful about how I made that ring system, because this is just a CH2 that's in between these two. So I could draw that CH2 as being here and draw a tight bond. Instead of doing that ring in the way that I've done it, I could do it out that way. And I can even correspond these numbers. Let's call this number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. So this is number 1 in front. Number two is in back. That means that this is number 3, 4, and 5. And you see how 5 is connected to 1 in the front,
3 is connected to 2 in the back, 3 connected to 2, 5 connected to 1, and I've got the whole thing mapped out. So we can do conformations of 5-membered ring systems using the same type of system, using the same Newman projections that we did for 6-membered ring systems. Excuse me, I didn't say 6. We didn't, the same that we'd used for straight chain things. We are going to take a look at 6-membered ring systems. We're about to do that next, and that's where we go next. Now, the interesting thing about these ring systems, though, is that this piece, the ring right here, locks this so that I can't get any conformation. I am locked into very specific conformations because the ring system here locks it. It acts very much like a double bond, preventing full rotation. It can't go 360 degrees. It can only go back and forth in a very limited sense. And that's why we call it pseudo-rotation as opposed to full rotation. Okay, the complexity continues as I go to 6-membered ring systems. So cyclohexanes. Cyclohexanes are extremely common within organic chemistry, and so much so that many different chemical reactions go through 6-member ring transition states, and they happen all the time. Understanding, really good understanding of 6-membered ring systems is an important aspect of organic chemistry because of how many things go through a 6-membered ring system transition state. So when we look at a 6-membered ring system, and we draw it flat, the bond angles here are of 109.5 degrees because the molecule doesn't stay flat in its three-dimensional form. What the molecule does, and here's the way that I usually transition through these, is that the molecule, if I lay it out flat, puckers on both sides. This side comes up, and this side goes down, and it turns into a chair conformation, what we call a chair conformation. So this is one way of drawing the molecule. These chair conformations also go through pseudo-rotation. So the chair conformation, if I take any given chair conformation and draw it out, and let me explain how I'm drawing too here. Let me slow down and start step by step first. When I draw a chair conformation, the first thing that I do is I take and put two parallel lines offset from each other. I start the middle one or the bottom one in about the middle of the top one and then carry it out about equal length. I then take and select a point that is up and down, and I draw my last two connecting lines. And that's what makes the chair conformation, makes it a little bit easier to draw. Chair conformations go through pseudo-rotation as well, but when they do so, they don't just rotate. They go through a step where one side first comes up, and as it comes up, it goes through what we call a boat conformation. There's some steps that are in between. One is called a twisted boat. I don't tend to get too locked up in those. So this is a chair. This is a boat. And then in the next conformation, as this group comes down, then what I do is I draw the top one forward of the bottom one, equal length, staggered, pick your bottom point, pick your top point, and finish out your chair conformation. And so we go back into a chair. So the numbering system, I want to be really careful. Let's call that number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I always like to go clockwise in my numbering systems. This is still number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. And down here, number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. So the numbering system never changes as I go through the pseudo rotation. So these conformations can interconvert at room temperature. And as they interconvert, we give certain names to these positions. Let me take and draw another chair conformation and look at how we describe certain positions on the chair conformation. Sometimes this is best done with a three-dimensional model. We can bring a three-dimensional model into it. That's always nice to do. Maybe we'll do that after in a little bit. But learning to draw them is a really important skill. On the six-membered ring, there are different positions for the hydrogens or other substituents. We give these names axial and equatorial. And each one of the positions on the different carbons have axial and equatorial positions. I'm just going to use A and E for the rest of them because it's going to make it a little bit easier. These positions here that stick upright are axial. These positions also axial. What makes something axial is the fact that it's sticking straight up on an axis. We can think about an axis for this molecule that goes straight up and down, and that's the axis. The equatorial positions are, if we think about this as a sphere, then the things that go around the middle are the equatorial. And the equatorial positions on these, when I look at them, all come around the middle of the molecule. And so these are all of the equatorial positions. Let's choose green for equatorial. When I go through pseudo-rotation, axial and equatorial exchange, not in that they're breaking bonds or moving location per se, but because when I go through pseudo-rotation, something that was axial, something that was axial becomes equatorial. So if I start off and I look at a position like this, and I say that this is axial and equatorial, and that this is carbon number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, and I go through the pseudo rotation and I draw the new structure, then what happens in these two positions is that, let's define something. Let's define this as up so that I'm looking at 5, 6. I'm looking at 5, 6, 3, 2 as being a flat plane, and that's up on that flat plane. This is the same thing. This is number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. Here is my flat plane. My plane resides between 2, 3, 5, and 6. This is still up so that I haven't changed the plane. And yet, when I look at the groups now, axial and equatorial have changed their locations. A still needs to be up, E needs to be down, A is up, E is down. But what I should do is, I don't want to confuse these with axial and equatorial, so let's say that this is, let's give it a different variable name. Let's say that this is M and this is N, and right now M is axial and M is equatorial. This is perhaps a better way to do it. And so I'm going to color that one axial, and I'm going to color this one equatorial. But then when they rotate, M and M stay in their same configuration relative to one another, but their position on the ring has changed. M is now equatorial, and N is now axial. This is really important as we go through and we start to look at conformations of these different chair conformations. For instance, let's take and put a substituent on a six-membered ring system and let's ask the question, how stable are the two conformations and which conformation is the most stable? So substituent and conformation. This will be methyl cyclohexane. Now, as I go to draw it, I'm going to just choose a direction. What I'm going to do is, because I'm not given any particular stereochemistry with this, I'm going to choose to focus on this methyl group as being up, and the hydrogen being down that's connected there. I'm gonna start it off by drawing it flat. And then I'm gonna choose to pull one side down and I'm gonna pull the other side up. And I'm gonna draw it into my conformation that is the three-dimensional conformation. When I do that, the methyl is up, the hydrogen is down, and I've set a flat plane as a frame of reference. There will be two substituents on the ring. The methyl must be up. The hydrogen must be down. When I go through the pseudo rotation, the two substituents will flip. No bonds break, and yet the orientation of what is axial and what is equatorial has changed. The relative orientation of methyl to hydrogen, this is still up, hydrogen is still down, methyl was up, hydrogen is down. Notice that nothing changes there, but what does change is the relative axial versus equatorial. In the first one, the CH3, the methyl, is axial. In the second one, the CH3, the methyl, is equatorial. Which one of these conformations is lower energy? Having the methyl group axial or having the methyl group equatorial? That's a question that we'd like to answer. And so to answer that, we need to know a couple of different things about these groups. What we find is that this one is about, I don't know if I have percentages, I don't have percentages. I want to say that it's like 75%, but it might be greater than 75%. It's 95%. There we go. So 95% are the methyl group equatorial, and only 5% with the methyl group axial. That means that with this thing being 95% equatorial, this is the lowest energy. Now I need to explain to you why. So this is just observation. The question is why? Why is it lower energy to have the large group equatorial? To answer that question, we've got to draw two other sort of drawings and look at it a little bit more closely. One answer is something called 1,3 diaxial interactions. One, three diaxial interactions, when I take a look at the two conformations, the methyl group being here is very close in proximity to these two hydrogens. This sets up a triangle here where these groups are very close. And this is 1, 2, 3, and these are diaxials. So this is the 1,3 diaxial.
Is that kind of like the same concept as having the two large groups being anti?
It's the same concept of having the two large groups being gauche.
Gauche, okay.
So they're anti, they're actually more similar to gauche. So what's happening is here, I'm getting sterics where these anti groups are repelling that methyl. So the methyl is very close. It's about 1.8 angstroms. So the distance, if I were to cover this distance, let's see, I can knock it down like this. The distance between a methyl and a hydrogen is about 1.8 angstroms, distance-wise. And that's pretty close. That puts them in fairly close proximity. And if I take and put the methyl group in an equatorial orientation, it relieves those 1,3 diaxials. It places the methyl group farther away from hydrogens. So now what I've got is I've got the small group axial. And large group equatorial. So now when it's equatorial, these hydrogens that are here look like they're pretty close. But the distance between that methyl and that guy is over 2 angstroms. It's farther away from the hydrogens, from the nearest possible hydrogens. And that relieves the 1,3 diaxials. So there's less strain. There's more room around an equatorial orientation like that. All right, the second reason is because of gauche and anti interactions. This is harder to draw. So let's do it this way. So what I need to do is I need to find a way to visualize both of these ring systems. So I'm going to start by drawing the three-dimensional, putting the methyl group up in an axial orientation. I'm going to put these hydrogens in as well, but I'm not going to put the rest of them in. And then I'm going to compare that to the pseudo rotation and the methyl group there. And I'm going to look down a particular bond. Now, the bond that I want to choose to look down, I'm actually going to look down two. I'm going to choose to cite from here. I'm going to look down this bond. And at the same time, I'm going to choose a parallel bond over here. And I'm going to look down this bond at the same time. And I'm going to draw a Newman that has that whole structure in it, but it's going to be comprised of two Newmans side by side. When I take a look at this CH2 group, that CH2 group is up, and it's up on the front carbons. I drew CH3, but I meant to draw CH2. So there's the CH2, and it's up on those two. This CH2 in back, that CH2 in back is down. And then I have three other positions, two other positions front and two other positions back. And I need to figure out what goes in each one of those positions. So as I look at here, the front carbon, these two are hydrogens. So I've got hydrogen and hydrogen on the front. And on the back, the up one is the methyl. And then everything else is a hydrogen. There's the first structure. Now I'm going to draw the second. But when I draw the second, I want to look down the exact same bond from the exact same orientation. So I got to be really careful now about how I number this. One, two, three, four, five, six. This one is one, clockwise, two, three, four, five, and six. I looked down 2-1. I have to look down 2-1 on the same bond there. And I looked down 4-5, so I've got to look down 4-5 here. I'm going to choose to cite this bond, and I'm going to cite this bond from those directions so that I'm keeping my drawing exactly the same as on the other side. When I do that, I'm going to draw the exact, very same, similar, identical structure, but I've got to figure out where my CH2s are first. So notice that carbon number three, which is on the front carbons. Carbon number three is coming down. That carbon number three is the CH2 group, and it is now on the front going down. And that makes the CH2 that is on the back one going up. So what is flipped, maybe I can do it this way. What is flipped is that was number three, three was up, three is now in this position, three is down. And I'll use green over here. Green was six, six was down, six over here, six is now up. Somehow I wanted to make that a CH3. Keep wanting to do that. There we go. Now I can put in the other positions because now they just make a peace sign and it's fairly quick to like feed them all in there and draw it out. All right, now I've got to figure out where that methyl went. So I'm looking down this bond and that methyl is still up relative to the hydrogen. So that methyl is up relative to the hydrogen on the back carbon. And everything else is a hydrogen. Super easy at this point. Okay, there's my two structures. Now I've drawn them both. Now the question is, what is going on in both of these? So as I look at both of these and I try to figure out what's going on, this is my large group. My large group is the CH3 group. My large group is the CH3 group. Notice something about the CH3 group. The CH3, the methyl, and the CH2, the ring carbon, in this orientation, the blue and red, how would you describe the blue and red in their relativeness on this Newman projection? What's the orientation of blue and red here? Are they anti? Or are they gauche? They're anti. And being anti, that's large sterics. In this system, on the right-hand side, they're gauche. And that's lower energy. So here, methyl and ring are anti. That's higher sterics. Over here, the methyl and the ring are gauche. Excuse me, are anti. What did I do? I messed it up.
I was wondering about that. I was like,
Yeah, call me on it.
Opposite.
Sometimes that happens. Thinking too hard about my next step. Apologize. Methyl and ring are now anti, and this is lower sterics and lower energy.
Just a heads up, it is 12:35.
Thank you. Okay, so we're going to end it there. So basically what happens is there's two effects. That the reason that a substituent is lower in energy in the equatorial position is because of two reasons. So we can cite the two reasons. Substituents are lower energy in an equatorial position because there are less 1,3 diaxials. And substituent is now anti to the ring. Making lower energy. Okay, so obviously this is just a first example. What we've got is we've got a bunch more to go through in terms of problems and showing some demonstrations of problems and how we solve them. How do we deal when we have two substituents? How do we deal when we have three or four substituents? How do we find the lowest energy conformation of a six-member ring system with multiple substituents? That's some of the things that we want to find. And the reason that we want to find those again is because not just about six-membered ring systems, but really about the idea that many different chemical reactions within organic chemistry go through six-membered ring transition states. And those transition states govern the products that get created, and they're governed by these same principles of
conformations about having your larger groups in equatorial orientations. And so we're going to find that by being able to do this analysis, it's going to give us insight into other chemical reactions as we go forward. Okay, so lots of really, really cool stuff here. And lots of visual, three-dimensional. This is where model kits are going to come really important. So you're going to want to dust off those model kits. Get those model kits out, because this is what they were designed to do. All right? Let's cut it there. I'll catch up with you guys either in office hours or in lab tomorrow morning or on Thursday. All right. Thanks for a good lecture.
So it's kind of funny that you're talking about